This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. If you have dreamed of owning a property in Israel, close to the sea or close to the center of Tel Aviv, now is your chance to make it a reality. The Blue Agency is happy to announce that they are in South Africa to discuss new property opportunities in Israel. For a private meeting with Barry Cohen to discuss your Israeli property or any Israeli property needs, WhatsApp him on 076-577-2000. That's 076-577-2000. The Blue Agency. Your Israeli property is in good hands.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov. One of the big news items that came out of the last weekend is, of course, the showdown that happened in the Oval Office with President Zelensky from Ukraine and President Trump. And even though that showdown didn't really have any direct bearing on Israel, I think that there is a lot to be learned from an Israeli perspective about how to deal with President Trump. And I just wonder whether the listeners have had to think about this, whether you, Howard, have had some thoughts about what we can learn from all of that, what Zelensky did right, what he did wrong, what he might have potentially done better in order to achieve his objectives. I got the impression that he came looking for a battle. He came ready to confront the president in order to try to show him a little bit of force in front of his own people, to try and show some power, and potentially even in front of President Putin, to try and show that he was willing to stand up to the US president. But I'm not sure that it's all played out so well for him. The good news, at least for Israel for now, is that President Trump seems to be very, very supportive of almost everything that Israel is doing and saying. And Prime Minister Netanyahu, for all his faults, seems to be playing his cards extremely effectively right now with the US president. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I'd love... the question is, as you're asking, is how does this impact and what lessons can be learned?
Exactly. Mm. What should we be doing and not be doing? What is Netanyahu doing right? What potentially could go wrong? Because we can see, from all reports, the lunch meeting was cancelled, and the White House staff...
The most un-Jewish thing I've ever heard. Who cancels a lunch?
Exactly, especially after a showdown like that.
Israel, starving.
A showdown that would justify lunch, absolutely.
Absolutely. Eat our feelings, damn it.
But I certainly got the impression that much of it was choreographed, that they came in looking to confront each other. Certainly Vice President Vance had his information ready and was willing to jump to the president's defense, which I found quite amusing, that the president should defer to members of his team, even the vice president, to somehow try to defend his position in front of a visitor. That seemed to be quite strange. The whole thing, the body language, the aggression that came out, I know you guys will be having a field day looking at that, and I certainly studied it quite closely. And I think I learned one or two things. The one thing I think I learned is that Zelensky didn't play his cards right. He might have achieved a lot more by being a little being softer, I would say, with the president and stroking his ego to some degree.
So it's interesting. People say that. I think it was just simply about... I think he was arrogant. And I actually don't agree that it was choreographed. To me, I kept watching the temperature in the room rising. I don't think it was choreographed. I don't think they wanted it to go that way. But Zelensky his body language was appalling and very, very dismissive. And Vance could see it. Trump couldn't see it really because he was next to him. He couldn't see the subtle rolling of the eyes at various times. I thought that it went very badly, but I don't think it was choreographed.
Well, I mean, I think the other thing was, of course, that Zelensky got on the plane and traveled to Europe, and the Europeans are very supportive of his position. So does that mean we're seeing this divide now between Europe and the USA? And what does that mean for the world order? What does that mean for Israel? What does that mean for the war in Ukraine? Is there going to be this massive divide between the Europeans and the Americans? What does that mean for NATO? I think there are a lot of implications that we need to think about here.
Let's talk about this issue of Hamas dealing directly with the White House. What do we know about this?
Well, the reports are saying that secret talks, which are apparently are not so secret anymore, secret talks have been conducted between the American administration, the White House in particular, and Hamas. And the little nuance here is that the talks have been conducted to try to secure the release of hostages. But in many reports I'm seeing, they say to secure the release of US hostages. Now, I'm not familiar with exactly how many of our current hostages also have US citizenship. But it seems as if the U.S. Is going about things in a slightly unusual way. First of all, for it to be reported that they are negotiating directly with Hamas is already a departure from usual protocol, because the U.S. government has said in no uncertain terms that Hamas is a terror organization and we don't negotiate with terrorists. But apparently they do, and apparently there are some negotiations going on behind the scenes, at least for the release of the U.S. hostages. The report goes on to say, and negotiate the end of the war. Now, I don't know whether that means that the release of the U.S. hostages will be enough to cause the U.S. to say, or to force Israel's hand on ending the war. All of that is unclear. But it was interesting that this report came out exactly on the day that a delegation of former hostages visited the White House, and there are some amazing photo opportunities showing, amongst others, Omer Shem Tov and Naama Levy and Eli Sharabi and some of the others in the Oval Office with President Trump. And some of the things that came out in that discussion gave me a lot of food for thought. First of all, I think it was pertinent that they presented him with a gold plaque, which had engraved on it the Talmudic phrase, whoever saves one life saves the whole world. And I think that that's a very, very pertinent phrase. And we've heard it mentioned many, many times in the context of Holocaust survivors, who now, generations later, have gone on to build families and who have descendants, all of whom would have been wiped out had that individual or those individuals not been saved from the Holocaust. So we've seen the impact on saving one life and how it potentially saves the whole world and how great this Talmudic phrase really is. And that was what was presented to President Trump yesterday. But it was interesting that Naama Levy in particular said, you gave us hope when we were there. So they had obviously picked up from the tunnels in Gaza that President Trump had been reelected to the White House. And somehow that fact gave the hostages some hope that they might be freed in the near future. And to be fair, he was very, very insistent and said again yesterday that hostages should be freed or else, using exactly those words. But when he came into office, we all remember him saying before his inauguration that the hostages should be released. And in fact, there were hostages released exactly around that time. So Naama Levy's statement to him saying that he gave those hostages hope, on the one hand, is a great compliment to him. But it kind of also shines a light back on the Israeli government to say, why didn't the hostages feel that same level of confidence that the Israeli government, that the Israeli prime minister would somehow, by hook or by crook, secure their release? And it is a slightly sad statement on the one hand. And when I thought about it a little bit more deeply, I understood to what extent the hands of the Israeli government were tied, even when the greatest justification existed for this massive military operation and for the Israeli, for the IDF to go in and rescue hostages almost at any price. But yet the prime minister couldn't make the same statements as the president made, and he couldn't undertake the same actions and didn't have the same leverage as the US president had. And much of that is not because of a weakness of the prime minister or the weakness of our army or the weakness of our country, but it's mostly about the extent to which we are forced to pander to the international community, even in moments of national crisis. We are still having to be concerned about what President Biden would have said, what the prime ministers and presidents of European allies would have said. Everybody was really, really concerned. And I think that rather than reflecting back on the Israeli governments and their inability to release the hostages sooner, I think potentially it reflects back on the Biden administration and the extent to which they tied our hands, even though there was a lot of help that came from the US at that time. But clearly our hands were tied to some degree. And now that things have been opened up a lot more, we're able to achieve more, clearly with the assistance of the president. But, you know, I don't know whether we can say, well, it was the president who secured the release. I think that it was the support of the president who allowed us to be able to secure the release. Perhaps that's a better way of putting it. What do you think?
Another angle that we might consider is that at the time when October 7th happened, Biden was in office. It was his administration. The Israel as a society, government, army were very, very vulnerable. They had been completely smashed from the pedestal that they held themselves on, that the world held themselves on, a massive, massive failure. And there was therefore a tremendous amount of more vulnerability then than perhaps now. And maybe part of that deferring to the Biden administration, looking to the U.S., was part of a lack of confidence that had resulted in October the 7th versus now. What do you think?
I think that there's a lot of truth to what you say. I also think that at that stage of the war, we were very much reliant upon the U.S. providing us with arms and weapons, armaments and weapons. And there was a concern that the U.S., if they didn't like everything that we did, might well stop the flow of arms and weapons to Israel. And indeed, we saw that they did that at certain points during the war. And that was very, very detrimental to Israel's war effort. And we've seen similar actions being taken against Ukraine, which is very detrimental to Ukraine's war effort. So I think that at that time, when arms and weapons were much, much more critical than diplomacy, we were being diplomatic in order to ensure the constant flow of arms and weapons that we needed from the US. Since then, we've learned some lessons. And one of the lessons that we've learned is, let's make our own arms and weapons. And even though we have done that to some degree in the past, there is much more of an effort now to create an Israeli defense industry that will allow us to be much more independent and rely only on ourselves in the event that we get into such crisis. Because the way that our hands were tied, because we were so concerned about the fact that they might stop supplying us with arms and weapons, I think was quite detrimental to our overall diplomatic and war effort.
The new IDF chief of general staff assumed command of the army yesterday. What do we expect from him?
So Eyal Zamir is the new chief of general staff, and there was a formal ceremony yesterday where he was presented with his rank as the chief of general staff and immediately assumed responsibility. It's interesting that he's come through the ranks of the armored corps. He was in the tank corps as a soldier, and he's come through the ranks that way, as opposed to some of the other chiefs as general staff who've had, let's say, more glamorous careers in their army days. But I think that Eyal Zamir, I think I mentioned this yesterday or the day before, that he's on two previous occasions been a candidate to assume the role of chief of general staff, and he was overlooked on two occasions, but third time lucky for him. But he has also served in the prime minister's office as the defense attaché to the prime minister's office, the defense secretary to the prime minister. And he's had a number of more diplomatic roles, as well as clearly a leader, a deputy chief of general staff in the past. And he is definitely cleaning things out. He's appointed new generals to assume critical roles, particularly the Southern Command. He's replaced the general in charge of the Southern Command, and he's replaced some others as well. And he's also reorganizing the army to some degree. Interestingly, one of the things that I saw that he decided to get rid of was the special unit that was dedicated to Iran. Now, I don't know what we should read into that, whether it's just simply a technical reorganization that's being subsumed into other things, or whether there is more of a message that we are getting from his decision to do that. But I think that he's going to be an interesting chief of general staff. And of course, he assumes responsibility at a very, very sensitive time. Unfortunately for Herzi Halevi, he will always go down in history as the chief of general staff on whose watch the war broke out, on whose watch we were caught snapping when this war broke out. And he acknowledged that to some degree yesterday in his departure speech, in his farewell speech that he made at the handing over ceremony. So I don't think that we're going to see massive differences in the way in which the IDF is operating. But Eyal Zamir did make one interesting comment, and I think that we need to take that seriously. And he said, Hamas has not yet been defeated, and they will be. So I think we will pick that up and see what that means moving forward. But he clearly has some plans about how he plans to deal with Hamas going forward.
And that's where we leave it. Anthony Reich, thank you as always for a phenomenal week of Israel reporting. Have a fantastic weekend, a Shabbat Shalom, and we'll catch you on Monday, 7:45 for the Israel Report.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. If you have dreamed of owning a property in Israel, close to the sea or close to the center of Tel Aviv, now is your chance to make it a reality. The Blue Agency is happy to announce that they are in South Africa to discuss new property opportunities in Israel. For a private meeting with Barry Cohen to discuss your Israeli property or any Israeli property needs, WhatsApp him on 076-577-2000. That's 076-577-2000. The Blue Agency, your Israeli property, is in good hands.